We've won again!
This is good, but what is best in life?
How about thermal nuclear war?
Wrong!
I would summon a demon more ferocious than all in hell!
Wrong!
I will then pass that.
Wrong!
Conan, what is best in life? Crush the enemy, see them driven before you, and let a lamentation of your women.
Contemplate this on the tree of woe.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 4.
Episode 4 of Garage Gamer, coming out a bit earlier than you probably expected.
That's right. This is the Gen Con report.
Yeah, Christopher was at Gen Con and had so much to report, we decided to make it its own thing, especially because we just recorded episode 30 and it's about 4 hours, so this deserves its own spotlight. So, Christopher.
David.
Gen Con.
Yes, Gen Con was a hoot. I love it. I usually try and go every year that I can. It's it's a four-day affair. These days it's in Indianapolis. Sounds like it's going to be there at least through, I think, 2015, and they're hoping to expand it beyond.
Nice.
We fill up the town.
We sure do.
We pretty much fill it up. The way it seems like, I was trying to get numbers, we may have 50,000 people there. Last year I was like, I don't know, maybe 15,000. I was way off.
Wow.
It's huge. We take over the town.
So this is not just a tabletop wargaming convention.
It's
all gaming.
It's everything. The reason we're doing this primarily on Garage Gamer is that there must have been some sort of falling out, or I don't know what it was. Somebody stepped on somebody's toes, or maybe GW just felt like they'd do better on their own, but
they ain't there.
They don't have a presence. Not even Warhammer Forge, not Forge World, no GW. The only way you're going to see GW products is through an independent retailer who has the booth.
Right.
I see parts there. I see products there, and I see there was a bit store there for GW stuff.
Okay.
And I think I saw a total of one GW game of anything while I was there.
Blood Bowl?
No, it wasn't Blood Bowl. I think it was Warhammer.
Okay.
But there's so much there.
Right.
You know, there's just, of course, you know, it goes without saying that Privateer Press and Weird have a major presence there.
Oh, my God. And they were tweeting constantly this weekend. I was not there, but I was following on Twitter. And, I mean, literally, hey, I'm going to be in the cafeteria for the next 30 minutes. If you walk in wearing a Puppet Wars shirt, I will give you this. I mean, literally, that's the type of crap that was being tweeted.
Oh, the number of just the stuff that you can get. The swag was cool. I mean, they had a copy of Rift, the video game, the massively multiplayer online game. Rift was just part of the swag package. Like, here you go.
Thanks.
Wow. I have 2 30-card magic decks.
Okay.
Just cool stuff.
I saw something on Facebook today. Someone asked, apparently there's someone stole a bunch of magic decks or something like that.
I don't know anything about it.
Like, I was reading, and it was something like thousands of dollars worth of magic cards might have been stolen from Gen Con. And this is actually...
From who specifically? Like, from a player?
No, I guess from... I'm assuming from Wizards of the Coast. Who the hell else has thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars of cards?
Well, a lot of people were selling individual cards. I wonder if maybe it was a...
I don't know. I heard some rumors, and they were from people who we both know, who we would both... They would not just say stupid things
You mean
this.
Our folks? Our people who are tweeting this?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
No, not tweeting. Someone posted on Facebook, somebody that we know. And I'm not going to name on the air, but it was... someone we know said, has anybody else heard of those? Thousands upon thousands of dollars worth.
No, I had no idea. I don't play Magic right now, but I was going to give these cards to Harrison. No, I had no idea. Someone...
Yeah.
I hate to say I'm not surprised. I guess I am. I don't like to hear about that sort of thing.
So I'm excited to hear about this because I got the green light for next year. With all the tweeting going on as we were doing all our stuff this weekend, I was telling Harrison about it. And my lovely wife kept hearing about all the cool stuff and realized that this is other games, not just wargaming.
Well, it's the biggest gaming convention in the Midwest, and it's huge. There's so much to do. Over 4 days, it's overwhelming. You can go to painting seminars, board games. There's a small contingent of video games, but that's more the exception, really.
Mm-hmm.
Miniatures, collectibles.
Do they have any, like, little... I know there was... I know Privateer Press was having games. Were there, like, tournaments?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh,
really?
God. Oh, the main convention hall, of which, you know, you can easily fit a football field into it, is just one room. And then you have other rooms of similar size that are devoted to open gaming, tournament and events. Privateer Press had, I think, open gaming and tournament for all 4 days. Weird, I believe, has the same thing going on. There's Battletech. There's Malifaux. There's, I mean, just from the miniatures, from collectible card games, of course, Magic has its own devoted area.
Right.
World of Warcraft card game has its own area. That seems to be doing very, very well.
Cool.
I'm not as familiar with it, but it seemed to be doing well.
I wasn't aware that there was a World of Warcraft card
it's
game.
It's huge. So. It apparently is huge. Cryptozoic Entertainment is making it.
Okay.
What else is big right now? I'm not a big fan, but it seems like Digimon and all those other Japanese-themed monster card games are still going very well.
Cool.
I shouldn't say unfortunately. It's a bit snide. It's not my thing, but it's popular.
Right.
Great with the kiddies.
But, like I said, once Heather found out that it's all sorts... Because you know Heather likes to game. I mean, she plays play board games and stuff with us all the time.
You know who's gone? Never Ooh. Didn't see it. White Wolf. They're just gone. Off the map. I'm not surprised. Last year, they had no product. They claimed that they were going to go legacy with all their printed items and everything is going to just go to PDF.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing they had was a tiny little corner booth with some, like, skanky gothic-looking girls selling a rave in New Orleans. And it was weird. Weird. Like, okay, do you have anything to sell?
That's
just
really
this flyer. Are you going to come to New Orleans? I'm like, probably no. No, I don't think so. So this year, no White Wolf whatsoever.
Huh.
So I think they shot themselves so firmly in the foot that they can't even limp themselves home. I don't know what happened to them.
I don't know either. All I know is, I mean, we don't have time to play, and I know I have tons of White Wolf stuff, but it's going up on eBay.
Well, yeah, you know what? When they took a really popular world, a World of Darkness, and they recycled it and made a third sort of world, a new World of Darkness, it was almost as popular as when Coke decided to go with Coke 2.
Yeah. Was that third edition Vampire?
Yes, sarcasm intended. It didn't work.
No, it didn't at all, the new Vampire. In fact... Well, no, we started in second edition. Then
we played second. We started. Well, I don't know if we started in first or not. I had a couple of first edition books, but second was the real mainstay for most White Wolf players.
And then was third edition the huge rules change, or was...
Yeah, where the clans were different. There was no more Camarilla. There was no more Masquerade.
Oh, that's right. Then you know what it turned into? Because I read that. It turned into the Anne Rice vampires. It literally turned into the Vampire Lestat.
Yeah.
If you read that, like the more powerful you get... The older you get, you just slip into torpor because you're, like, too powerful.
Right.
Which is exactly what happens to stuff in the Vampire. I'm, like, reading this going...
This seems awfully familiar.
But I didn't want to play that. That wasn't what I wanted, so what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, so they weren't there, but so many other things were there. If Heather wants to go, there's so much for her to do.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not just gaming, although that seems ludicrous at a gaming convention. There's all kinds of tchotchkes and T-shirts and fun stuff and just wonderful nerdery. People are dressed up all over the place.
Well, we will definitely be going.
It's awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
So I'm excited because I want to go so bad.
Yeah. Well, the highlights, interesting. This year, I didn't notice any trend-breaking new games, like when Magic the Gathering reared its head.
Uh-huh.
Everybody knew right away that things had changed. It's like, okay, this is bigger. This is a genre-defining new game.
Yeah.
Everything will be different. D&D, same thing. It's like, well, D&D pretty much invented our world.
Yeah.
But, you know, Magic the Gathering, HeroClix to a limited extent.
Never got into it.
It's not my thing, but...
I know a lot of people play it and they have a blast with it.
The HeroClix this year, the big selling point for them was that they released Street Fighter HeroClix. And for those who play it...
Hadouken!
Yeah, pretty much. They were kind of cool, actually. That was very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can you do Blanca?
Barlog wins.
Barlog.
It said Barlog.
Yeah, totally
I know it did.
Well, these days we got to be careful because most people listening to the show probably are more familiar with Street Fighter 4.
Oh.
So.
Well, when you had Street Fighter 2 on your, what the hell system was it we were playing?
Super Nintendo.
Was it on Super Nintendo?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Then they called Barlog. I don't know why, but we would make fun of that all the time.
Interesting thing.
Sonic Boom!
Balrog is actually M. Bison in Japan.
Right.
And yeah.
Because the boxer was M. Bison, and it came to America, and Mike Tyson's people were like, oh, hell no.
I don't think so.
You didn't change it enough.
Anyway, so some video games were there as well. This year I saw on a gigantic screen for Rock Band and DJ Hero and some dance game and things like that. But the real mainstay of the show were the board games, the card games, the miniatures.
Okay.
You know, and role-playing as well. I mean, there was role-playing everywhere, from live-action role-play to tabletop role-play. There was an entire room dedicated to Dungeons & Dragons. There were events all over the place. You could do whatever you want.
I still, you know, I haven't played Dungeons & Dragons since I don't know, it's got to be a decade at
least. Well, I want to start a campaign, so.
But Harrison really wants to play, too. And I know 4th Ed's really different, but, mm-hmm. I mean, I've been reading over the rules, and I'll tell you this much, it seems like it would be fun. It may not be as involved, but I'll tell you.
The system is different, it's streamlined, and for those who are used to 3.5, probably too simple for them.
Maybe.
For someone who hasn't played in a decade, and you have children, and you have a job, and you're really busy all the time, and when you sit down to read a book, you tend to fall asleep half the time, like I do.
Uh-huh.
It's like, why don't you read? Because when I read, I fall asleep. It's a mnemonic now.
Exactly.
Or a Pavlovian response. So, in that, a simpler system tends to work out.
And I got to tell you, this is just my personal opinion. I never played a wizard in D&D. Because you'd get a magic missile, and you'd fire it once, and the rest of the game, you sat in the back and prayed to God nobody got through the front line of defense.
If you started off at level one the way we did, I like to play wizards very much, but it was always an investment. It's like, are we going to get past level two or three or four? Because if we are, I'll play a wizard. Because then by the time we get to level five, level six, mm-hmm. I've actually got something to do.
Yep.
In 4th edition, you've got something to do every round, and you have options. And you've got as many options as the fighter, mm-hmm. or the rogue, or the cleric, or anyone else. The Warlock, for example. Yeah, I mean, all of those characters actually have a purpose, and each character is very firmly defined on what they do.
Yeah.
I guess let's talk about D&D for a second, because that's a big show. I mean, D&D was they had Wizards of the Coast,
right?
Through TSR, Wizards of the Coast is the company that owns D&D now.
They bought D&D a while ago. Yeah,
so they had a huge booth, and of course they were selling news. I didn't see anything particularly new. I don't follow the product line as much. I only own the three main 4th edition books.
Uh huh.
But you know, they one of the side gigantic side football stadium sized rooms was dedicated to role playing D&D.
Oh, cool!
I mean, you know, it's still going strong. D&D started Gen Con. It's the reason Gen Con exists. For those who don't know, Gen is Lake Geneva, which is where TSR, the company that invented D&D, came from. But, I mean, D&D is incredibly popular. From Lake Geneva to Milwaukee to here in Indianapolis. Not here, but Indianapolis.
But, no, I mean, like I said, I'm interested in playing it, and people have been really asking for it for another garage game, or so we're going to have to do it at some point just to get some gaming in so we could talk about it.
Sounds like a plan. Well, it's nice. Yeah, each character has their own purpose now.
Uh-huh.
Whereas before in old D&D, it kind of sometimes felt like the cleric is there to sit back and wait till somebody got hurt and heal them. The rogue is there to unlock the door.
Yep, and then the fighter gets to do
everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then the wizard goes, oh, we're in trouble. Magic missile. Okay, I'll see you guys in a half hour.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does a D3 worth of damage.
Yep.
Damn it.
Yeah. Well, but at least it's automatic.
I remember. I'll tell you the most fun I ever had playing D&D. I went over to Bill Foley's house and I just stopped by. It's a friend of ours. Stopped by one night and they were playing, and they'd been playing this campaign for flipping ever.
Okay.
And he's like, "Just make up a character and you can play." And they're like, "We need a wizard. The guy who plays wizard isn't here tonight." These guys were like level 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like a level 1 wizard. We were on some sort of a mountain fighting mountain giants. So we got through the one battle, and it's like you get 8,000 experience points. So by the end of the night, I was like level 15.
Nice.
So it was like I'd never actually gotten into a game where I was playing a wizard that we'd played that long, where I actually had lots of spells and things to do. So by the end of the night, I'm like, so this is why people like playing the wizard.
It's great. By the time, who needs a door to Hades? There we go. Let's go.
So it was actually pretty darn fantastic. I really enjoyed playing it. But we will definitely cover that at some point along the way.
Absolutely.
And if you're willing to be the DM,
sure.
Then I'll definitely play. I just between three kids and trying to paint models and clean this damned basement and do the show, I cannot run a D&D campaign. So, So, all right. So let's go. Now, I know there's, you saw a lot of the big companies.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a trade show too, in a way. It's not a trade show. It's a consumer show, but, the producing companies are there. They put giant signs above, so you can often see just by looking up where they're located. Privateer Press is a big one.
I would expect so.
Wizards of the Coast is a big one. Weird is getting bigger. Now let's talk about Weird for a second. Malifaux is, of course, very popular. They seem to be doing well for themselves. They just come out with a second supplement. Rising Powers with the first supplement. The second one, you know, I don't follow the game as well. Do you
Twisting
remember?
Fates.
Is that what it is? Twisting Fates. It sounds
no,
like
Twisting Fate is, I think, they're...
I think that's it. I think that's it, because they've got it looks like they have a new faction.
I think Relian tweeted the picture of the book when he picked it up. It looks, I mean, I just, you know how much I love Malifaux. Well, I'm so excited.
It sounds like, it appears as though they've got a new faction called the Twisted, if I remember this correctly.
Yay.
So, some new troops to try, new gangs to try.
Right.
In addition to that, they have a new product called Terraclipse.
Now, they actually had this at Gen Con last year, because D6 Generation talked about it.
Okay.
And apparently they had it there, and they were showing it to people, and then when they were supposed to go sell it, wherever they was manufactured, mm-hmm. like the card wasn't as thick as it was supposed to be. It was bendy. It wasn't working.
Okay.
And apparently they scrapped all of it.
Oh.
Like, and I'm going to say kudos to Weird. I mean, they put a huge investment into this Terraclipse. There was all this buzz. People wanted to buy it, and they scrapped all of it and said, no, it's not up to the quality standard we want it to be. It's not what it's supposed to be.
Right.
And it took a full... I mean, I've been literally watching since last August, waiting to see when this stuff was going to come out. And...
Well, it looks awesome.
Yeah. So go ahead and... I mean, for anyone who doesn't know what it is...
Terraclipse is effectively... It's a packet, and... When you buy it, it's just wrapped in ceramic, and it's like it looks like an 8.5 by 11. It's about an inch and a half thick, or a box. But when you pop out these cardboard cutouts and you assemble terrain, and the clips means that you've got these little plastic clips that holds this into place. So when you can build,
and it's a thick cardstock,
yeah,
and
you've got, you know, buildings or sort of rolling ziggurat like structures or pillars or whatever it is that you happen to buy the set for.
Now there's three sets, to my knowledge, available. I know a little bit about this. I've been following it. They've got sewers,
mm-hmm.
they've got buildings,
yep.
and then they've got the streets of Malifaux.
Right.
And then you can buy the clips. Now, I did read from someone tweeted that they had the special edition version of Lord Chompy Bits on the second floor of a building. Lord Chompy Bits is a pretty big model, if you don't know what it is.
I did see it on display there, yes.
And they said it was on like the second floor on the cardboard with the clips, and it wasn't bending. It wasn't, like, they're putting their biggest models up high on second and third levels of the buildings. And they're like, it was holding it just fine.
What this does is it would probably make Malifaux be a spectacular game to play using these. It also made me, I'm dying to play Necromunda on these things.
Now, Necromunda is the...
It's GW.
It's fantasy.
No, you're thinking of Mordheim.
Mordheim is fantasy. Necromunda is 40K then?
Yeah, effectively. Necromunda is a planet. It's like a hive planet. Hive meaning like cities are sort of like hives.
Right.
And they the higher up you go, the more rich they are. Way down in the depths of these hives, it starts to get pretty darn seedy.
Right.
And that's where roving gangs live, to sort of eke out a living. And you've got these roving gangs of crazy different types of people who try and just scrap out a living.
And it's sort of part board game, but it's also part RPG a little bit.
Yeah.
In that you gain experience in your crew or your gang.
Let's clarify it in the way that Blood Bowl is arguably like a role-playing game.
If you have a squad and they can gain experience and level up. And
you start to care about each character. It's like, oh, I can't believe that Dr. Death died. Oh, nuts. And he finally found a bolter, too. And you've got a team. You've got a gang. And
Dr. Death, and he finally found a bolter. That's fantastic.
It's like that. It's like you've got a squad, and you've got a leader, and you've got each guy who might be, well, okay, this guy's going to be more my heavy weapon specialist. These are my scouts. This guy's got this. Ooh, this guy's really good in combat. He's got a +1 strength.
Cool.
Oh, it's an older game, but you can get the rules online, actually, for free.
No.
But the Terraclipse would be awesome for that. Then again, these Terraclipse would be awesome for just about anything, including Malifaux.
Yeah, I'm dying to try some play. I want to play some more Malifaux, but I'm really dying to get these clips. I did order them from UGG.
Yeah.
And so as soon as they come in, we will be playing on it.
It looks really good. They also, Weird Games also had a second product out there. They've got a new game. It's called Puppet Wars.
Now, this surprised me because when I kept, I'm on the Weird forums, but I don't go on a lot of forums. I got to be honest. I've signed up to a ton of forums.
Mm-hmm.
I don't post often. I'm signed in so I can go look around and read what's up. But
sure.
You know, I have enough time posting on our own forum. But I knew Puppet Wars was coming out, and I've seen pictures of the models. And because there were all the little models on bases, I thought it was going to be like another different version of the of Malifaux. And it, someone tweeted a picture of it, and it's a board game.
It's a board game. They have their own miniatures, and it's clearly a reflection of Malifaux.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, Lady Death or
Lady Justice.
Lady Justice. She had her own puppet figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her little feet are little stubs, and she's a little puppet.
Which is cool, because that actually follows the fluff of the game, Zoraida the Hag from the Neverborn.
Hmm.
She makes little voodoo puppets of people. In fact, if you remember, you have the... I gave you my second copy of the main rules.
Mm-hmm.
As you flip through the pages with the stories, they have all the little puppets on there. Those are all her little voodoo doll puppets she makes.
This whole game is, I guess, based on puppets. And the board is about a foot by a foot, and in the center of it is a very large hex-based... map.
Okay.
They're all blank, but you put chips down or whatever, tiles down to represent terrain. And then you have your miniatures, which are much smaller, and they represent your puppets. And then you play a game on the board. I guess in a way you could say you sort of build your own force, a bit mm-hmm. like chess, except you build your own team.
All right. Did you get a chance to play it? Or did you
I never actually got a chance to play it. I wanted to sit down for a demo, but they were kind of busy, and I couldn't get a game in. So I got to see it being played a little bit. It looks interesting. You still have the card mechanic.
Cool.
So it looks interesting. I don't know. I don't know if... I don't know what to make of it, in a way. I don't know if I want to collect miniatures for a board game, necessarily.
I'm already collecting Malifaux miniatures, so mm-hmm. I mean, if someone has this, I'd love to try it and play it,
yeah.
But I don't know that I'm going to invest in a brand new game right now.
Don't know, but an interesting concept, to be sure, and it looks very, very simple to, like, just...
It looks like it would be a ton of fun, though. I mean, if it's anything close to the fun that I have playing Malifaux, I know I'll like it, only because, like I said, I love the heck out of Malifaux, so...
Yeah, it looked pretty neat.
I'm very interested in that. Yeah. So, from Weird, what else did you see? Now, you saw...
From Weird, I'm sure that they have new miniatures coming out thanks to the new supplement.
Plus, I know Weird goes and they'll put out the alternate versions of the models. Now, they don't have, like, the epics like they have in War Machine. Like, the model is...
In War Machine, they've got the extreme versions, yeah.
Well, they have the... Yeah, they have that extreme... This is kind of like the extreme version where the rules aren't any different, but if you want...
You know what, like Chompy Bits?
Yeah, like Chompy Bits. And some of those are only available at Gen Con.
I think
this
they
is
had
the regular
one.
Model.
I think that they had another one like that.
They call them the Nightmare versions and stuff like that. It's like, this is the regular model. This is a bit fancier, the Nightmare version that you can buy. I know they had a Nightmare Teddy and stuff like that.
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually really exciting. I kind of wished, if nothing else, I wanted to go there just to see all the stuff that they had.
Well, it's breathtaking, the quality of the painting there. I saw Jennifer Haley, the Cool Mini or Not winner.
Oh, yeah?
The $10,000 Cool Mini or Not winner. She was there. She was representing Cool Mini or Not.
Uh-huh.
She has her own video now, and I saw her painting, and I tried not to be a total drooling fanboy. Tried. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Are you Jen Haley? Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, I love your work. Tried not to knock my knees together.
Oh, my God.
So...
All right, but now I know you did take some notes while you were there.
Yeah.
And I got some of it here because, you know, just the different companies you saw and things you wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you went by the Flying Frog Productions booth?
Flying Frog. I wasn't aware of this company so much. I'd played one of their games before. I played a game called Last Night on Earth, which is a semi-cooperative, semi-competitive game.
Isn't that zombie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cool. It's really fun. Flying Frog is known for their glossy production. Mm-hmm. Sort of tongue-in-cheek rules, but the game itself is often just a lot of fun to play. One of their little signature things is that they like use photographs of people to put on their cards, and each person plays like a different character.
Mm-hmm.
So each person has their own unique personality. Ooh, who did I get today? Oh, hell, I got Dr. Watson with the shotgun or whoever, you know.
Okay.
And the cool thing is they're all just employees. So if you're familiar with their games, it almost feels like celebrity status. Oh, my God, it's Dr. Zukov. Yeah! You know, and... So the game that caught our attention this time around, I didn't know it existed until some of my friends from Lafayette came by and said, we just all chipped in on this game. You've got to play it. It's called Fortune and Glory. It's a large board game. I think it retails for $100. So it's got a price tag to it, but we played it like 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
We played
over the weekend.
Over the weekend. We played the hell out of this game. And the concept is you are a fortune hunter. in much the same way as like Indiana Jones or his rival Belloc, you know.
Okay.
And Nazis are all over the world, so you've got this...
Oh, so it's during World War II.
It's World War II, so it's like, yeah, beat up the Nazis, take the Nazi gold, and find the treasure in the Andes and sell it for money, and...
Cool.
So Fortune and Glory is your sort of... You're a dilettante traveling the world with your trusty dog and your camera or whatever it is you're doing.
Okay.
In my case, I played the evil scientist, Dr. I think it was Dr. Zhukov, I think, from Moscow. So... My goal was I had a high cunning. I wasn't exactly agile. You've got like stats. You've got agility and cunning and lore and combat. And my combat was okay. I had a lot of dice, but I had a penalty that I only hit on fives and sixes instead of fours or higher. So my guy wasn't exactly supposed to be beating everyone up. Instead, he just sort of thought his way out of problems.
Cool.
So each person has their own special ability. Like there's one rough and tumble guy. The goal is to like go in and find, you know, this treasure, and you have to expose yourself to all these different dangers, and if you don't do well, you might have to deal with a cliffhanger, which takes more than one turn to resolve. And you know, just the sort of tongue-in-cheek Nazi fighting that you have to go on.
So, and, you know, not that we're trying to, you know, we keep saying we should beat up Nazis. If there's any Nazis listen to the show, turn it off. Because we don't like Nazis.
Yeah, I gotta say, Nazis were harmed in the making of this game.
If there's any Nazis listening, we don't care if we're offending you. So just putting it out there.
Yeah.
So, but you really like this one, huh? I mean, you played it five times in what, 3 days?
This was really fun. It's really fun. I think that Flying Frog should be a company to watch. If you haven't played Flying Frog games, go to your local game store, see if you can find a demo for something that's open and play it.
Cool.
We also played another one, and unfortunately this was very sort of last minute. I don't remember the title for it, but it was like another one where you're an invader. You're a space invader landing on Earth.
Ooh.
We just got a very small taste of it. I liked it.
You just march to the left and the right, and when you go all the way left, you come down one, and then you go to the right and down one, and they shoot at you? Is that kind of Space Invader?
Yeah, I don't even know if our listeners know the video game Space Invaders.
Somebody better. Chris Yu is only 2 years younger, 3 years younger than me. He should at least remember.
We always liked that, but different, because it didn't have that part.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, you're
so what part did it have?
It did have the part where you're an alien coming down, and like it's like those B-movies where you're like, the evil space alien, you know, shooting, you know, people screaming off in the distance.
Teenagers from Mars, astro zombies, yeah. That type of stuff.
You ever see The Simpsons, and they've got those little, like, tentacle guys in jars.
Yeah,
that's the race I was playing.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So my goal was, you're supposed to capture territories and eventually, like, accumulate a certain amount of terror points.
Okay.
And when you've, like, terrorized the population enough, you win. In my particular case, my specific objective was to just glass whatever territory I took over, just demolish it and cause terror that way. So it was fun. I wish I had the title of that one. It was literally just something we did because the table was open. But Flying Frog really impressed me with what I saw, especially Fortune and Glory, and I already know that Last Night on Earth was fun. So Flying Frog, I recommend.
Okay. So
company to watch.
You played some stuff by Rio Grande, too.
Rio Grande, I played... Was it Carcassonne?
It says Carcassonne here.
You know what? That was just literally a demo game. And one of the things we could do is there are ways to play games at Gen Con either as a demo in the main exhibit booth, where if a table opens up, you can sit down and you can get a demo game, and they'll just teach it to you. And in this particular case, there are also open gaming tables where just, like, games are open. Mm-hmm. You can either buy tickets... generic tickets, which are usually $2 per person, and then you could pretty much check out any game you want and play it.
Oh, cool.
I mean, there are plenty of opportunities to play games for free, but if there's a very specific game by a very specific company, there's probably a place to, like, isolate it and say, I want to play this one. Sign up for it and play it.
Cool.
In this case, there was just an open table with the free copy of Carcassonne, so we just sat down to try it. Carcassonne is far from a new game. In fact, you can probably even download it on Xbox. I just want to
play it more often on Xbox than I ever do because I don't have anyone else to play it with, but I love the game.
It's kind of in the same category in some ways as Settlers of Catan. It was one of those games that sort of defined the German board game era. It's German board games are known for their sort of non-violent aspect.
Yeah, it's like I got to build and take more territory than you and build up my land. It's quite simple, actually.
Yeah, you lay down tiles that have to connect in some way. Each of the tiles will have to fit in some way or you can't place it. And the goal is you build castles, you develop roads, you set down farmers, and you develop monasteries, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think that's everything. And with this very simple concept, it's just sort of a fun tile game. And score the most points to win. Very simple. I just want people to remember that it's out there. If you haven't played Carcassonne, to try it. It's just a great pastime.
That's a fantastic game. So moving along, you also hit the Mayfair table.
Mayfair, I think everyone's familiar with Mayfair if you've ever heard of Settlers of Catan.
And if you play board games, you kind of have to have heard of Settlers of Catan, I think.
I will say that if you haven't played Settlers of Catan, you are missing out. This is probably one of the single greatest board games of our generation.
Anybody can learn it. Like, we have friends who aren't into board games, and you teach them this, and they like it.
This is bridging the gap between a gamer and a non-gamer. This is the game that both gamers and non-gamers play. And I don't say that to say it like, well, it's a family show that even the adults will love. No. Gamers love this game.
Yeah. No, in fact, I'll tell you this. I used to go back before I moved up to Gurnee, when I was going down every Friday over to Bill Foley's house, because that's where the gaming was, at our friend Bill's house.
Yeah.
You know, we'd get there, and Bill has, you know, those industrial strength, 4 foot wide, the thick, heavy gauge shelves, 4 or 5 shelves high.
Yeah.
And he's got 5 sets of those shelves full of board games.
Wow.
He's got 20 feet of board games. I mean, it's stupid, you know?
It's crazy.
I mean, he's been collecting board games now. I mean, they're getting a bit older than us, and there's about 7 or 8 of them that always game, so all the games are there. But no matter what you show up for, as soon as you hit more than 4 people, a lot of other games you get locked out at 4 or 5.
Right.
Settlers can play up to 8.
Yep.
So, and plus...
Up to 6.
8.
What version are you playing?
Settlers, if you take 2 boards and put it together, you can play 8 people, the double board.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you move up, you can do the 5 and 6 man game where you just add some tiles.
Oh, I'm just thinking, like, they make an expansion where you can literally play a 6-player, but I guess that's just, you've got 2 sets, you can do whatever
right,
you want.
Right, yeah, well, if you buy the second set, they had the expansion rules in there where they say take this amount of the tiles and it's a 5 to 6 player game, a big island, or they have what's called the peanut, where you basically take the two hex-shaped islands and just touch them together at one end, and it's freaking huge, and there's 8 players, and it's fun. But that's the game, I think, every Friday night we played it at least once or twice, because it takes about an hour.
It doesn't get old.
And, yeah, it's always a different game. I'm certain most of you listening there, you know, we're preaching to the choir.
I hope most of you know Settlers. If you haven't, check out Settlers of Catan. My personal opinion is, of all of the Settlers, the expansion that includes Cities and Knights of Catan might be the greatest game in existence.
Yes, the Cities and Knights I played, I did like it. I think I played all the expansions. Seafarers was okay.
Seafarers doesn't add enough to the game, but it's fun in conjunction with the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's not enough to be a game in its own.
Right. But some of the stuff it adds, I mean, I found some of the stuff it adds to be unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can do this and win, and it allows you to do extra things, but it didn't really add to this overall fun of the game, whereas the Cities and Knights, or Cities and Knights, right?
Cities and Knights. It changes the game. It's a different game at that point.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Well, while we were there, I mean, as far as that sort of open gaming, demo gaming, and then event gaming where you pay tickets to play, Mayfair is probably one of the biggest supporters of that. They have demo games everywhere. They had a specific roped-off section that was for competitive play.
Okay.
There are competitive Settlers players. And
wow.
It was neat. Lots of competition. Lots of serious, heavy world competitions at Gen Con, especially for Magic and that sort of thing.
Hmm.
But Settlers was there, too. A couple of the games that they were promoting were Settlers-related.
Okay.
They have Catan Geographies, and one of the games that we tried was Catan Geographies Germany. So the map is predestined. It always looks like Germany. The positions are always in the same place. Your general Catan rules are there if you've played it before.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, guys, if you haven't, it's a tile game, and where everyone has to pay attention every turn because you potentially collect resources based on where you're built every turn.
It is a resource management game. You take your resources, you trade them in to expand, and basically what you own is worth points, and once you hit X points, you win.
That's it.
Very simple.
Geographies Germany, the downside, I'll say the negatives up front, I question whether or not it has long-term replayability because the map is always the same, the numbers are always the same, and up to 4 players, and the players always set up in the same place.
Yeah, you have to be in, exactly. I've actually played this at UGG.
Oh, have you? Okay.
It was one of their demo board games.
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Our friend Fred was all excited to play it because It had real geography. There was the it had historical landmarks.
Correct.
Kurt's very into history and geography.
That was one of the major deviances. Is you also you build towns, but you also develop the landmarks of Germany.
Right. Now, Fred really loved it. I think we played it twice. I played it with Fred, my friend Fred. I played it with his son and with the boy. We played it twice. I did find after the second time, having played Settlers so many times more than everyone else who'd played this version of it.
Yeah.
By the second time, I knew how to win it. I knew exactly what I needed to do to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just basically became, could I get the cards? I mean, granted, they hadn't played. Fred had never played Settlers of Catan before. Harrison had. Fred's son hadn't. So they didn't have the experience. But I think if you're an experienced Catan player.
Limited replayability, perhaps?
My personal opinion, yes. I would much rather play Catan than play that. If you're into the geography and you're into the historical landmarks and stuff, it would be fun.
If you're interested in Germany, or if you're interested in just collecting Catan-related games, or if you're just a game collector, there are a number of reasons to get it. But I would not call this a smash hit. But it was interesting to play.
Yeah.
In a like vein, I also played Catan America, Trails to Rails.
Okay.
That was an interesting one. The map is America. The map does not change. The numbers are effectively the same except for a few spots. It's in a nutshell, we played it and we were slightly disappointed. We liked it, but it's cluttered.
Okay.
For experienced Catan players, what we found was trading was less necessary, and there was a lot to keep track of. Just a little bit more to keep track of than you enjoy for a Catan game.
Mm-hmm.
The concept was you have a certain amount of supplies that you need to get to other people's cities.
Okay.
So they have to go to other people's cities. But you also have to build a certain amount of cities before you can unlock those goods.
Okay.
You have to connect cities by rail. Gold is sort of another resource that you collect from turn to turn. And we found that usually trading didn't happen as often. It was okay.
It sounds like Rail Baron.
Kind of. It was Catan.
I mean, Rail Baron is where, but that's the one that you guys actually draw the map with the crayon and connect your cities. But then you get, I have to get from this city to that city, and I'm going to.
The concept is kind of the same, but it's Catan based.
Okay.
I don't know. To be honest with you, I felt that, like there was a game there. I was interested in it. The game might be slightly different based on where you end up building your rails, where you might end up building your cities. But it felt like it was a game where Catan was sort of thrust into it where it wasn't necessary.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There are two games in there. They didn't mesh as well as they were supposed to. As much as I wanted to like it, I have to say, try it at your store first, but I don't know that this is an absolute necessity. I wish I liked it more, but it was worth demoing. I was really looking forward to trying it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I wanted to love it. I only liked it. I'll play it again. It would be no problem if somebody bought it. I'd certainly play it, but it's not Catan level. They've raised the bar so high for themselves, it's going to be a challenge.
All right. Now, there's three left here, and I'm gonna take them in a very specific order here because I think that it'll roll a little easier.
Sure.
Now,
do you feel we should maybe take a quick station identification?
Sure. Been 40 minutes. Why not take a break, put in a quick bumper, something to promote ourselves?
All right. Talk to you in a minute.
One time I hired a monkey to take notes for me in class. I would just sit there with my mind a complete blank while the monkey scribbled on little pieces of paper. At the end of the week, the teacher said, "Klaus, I want you to write a paper using your notes." So I wrote a paper that said, "Hello, my name is Bingo. I like to climb on things. Can I have a banana? Eat cake." I got an F. When I told my mom about it, she said, "I told you never trust a monkey." The end.
All right.
Change my pitch up. Smack my bitch up. I love that song, and I lost the CD. I'm going to have to get that. I love that song. I don't know why.
You can get it on iTunes, probably.
Probably. Get anything on iTunes. Hell, you can get our show on iTunes.
Yeah.
Any old
Clearly,
crap.
You can
any old
get
crap.
Anything.
All right, so All right. Of the three places left, let's hit. Now, one you kind of got a preview for. You didn't actually play a game, so let's hit that first. You went over to Privateer Press.
I did. Well, I wanted to talk about Privateer Press just because they're doing well. They're coming up to about 10 years, and it's relevant. You and I have been kind of going back and forth a little bit on War Machine and Hordes.
Yes, we have.
You're sort of dabbling in it. Your vote would you say your vote is still loud? I mean, I know that you want to really love it. You're still struggling to get the hang of it, and maybe your vote's not cast? I don't want to speak for you. What do you think?
Okay, the jury is still out.
Uh-huh.
I would say, and I want to actually do a Garage Gamer on Hordes, because
yeah,
now
yeah.
that I've been playing it, I understand it. And I will say this much. I like Hordes better than I like War Machine.
We can certainly revisit.
I like the mechanic, but for me...
Mm-hmm. Well, that's appropriate. I tend to go on the War Machine side. I've got two armies for War Machine, and if I do a third, it's probably going to be a mercenary War Machine.
And you like the... You get your little focus tiles, and you focus your... And you're sitting there deliberating, I need this here, I need that there.
Even more than that, I like the stompy robots.
Yeah, I like the stompy monsters.
Yeah.
And I like the stompy monsters better. I mean, I've been on the show plenty of times saying I don't care for the Warjack models.
Fair enough. I can understand that. But some people don't.
Now, seeing them up close and seeing Harrison play, and he's been playing with them, using them... they're not, I'm getting used to them.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
But I still don't really have any desire to build and paint them.
Maybe that's Stockholm Syndrome, who knows?
Whereas, yeah, maybe. But then, but I love them troll bloods.
Do you?
And I like the mechanic better. I like the forcing,
mm-hmm.
where you're running that risk. You can really push them over the edge. Honestly, it's betting heavy to win heavy.
For sure.
Because that last game that I played where you were coaching Harrison, it's like, okay, I'm probably going to lose, so I'm going all out. And I pushed each monster to its full fury level and popped the feet, give them all the fury. And I realized I'm not going to be able to take all this back into my caster next turn. But hopefully, if I've done enough damage this turn, then on the next turn, if they go berserk, they're all going to be all over these guys anyway.
You start to gamble with them, and the mechanic feels a lot like having to make a really wobbly leadership test, which is effectively what it is.
Yeah.
Threshold tests are like bad leadership tests.
Yeah.
It's like, I can only hope. Here we go.
So I will say I like that better. And like I said, and I'll wait until we do a Hordes episode to really get into it. But right now, the jury's still a little out for me.
Well, we can revisit War Machine and Hordes and kind of talk about where we were from last time. So
absolutely.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
And I actually know. I mean, I'm not just asking questions this time. I have something to offer.
Well, we both have projects we're working on.
For them,
so that'd be great.
Yeah. My Troll Bloods. I will say this much. I mean, what's really keeping me in it is that I like the fluff and I love the models for the Troll Bloods.
I really like them. Well, you have something to look forward to then, because I think in fall, well, I know in fall, they're going to be coming out with a new book called Hordes Domination.
Which is sort of like the new thing. It's the Hordes version of whatever the new
The Wrath book. Right.
Wrath.
What Wrath did for War Machine was it released new warcasters for every faction, including the mercenaries.
Okay.
It also released new troops, not so many troops, but new individual characters, solos they're called.
Lots of new warjacks.
Lots of warjacks. And,
Luke Fritz was going nuts about what, like, apparently Retribution is getting.
Retribution got a real shot in the arm. They got effectively a whole new line of warjacks to try. The difference between what they had before, getting into the storyline, there's multiple houses, political houses within the elves of War Machine, or the elves of Ios.
Okay.
One of the houses is House Shaiel.
Okay.
Their War Machines, their Myrmidons, their Retribution Warjacks, are exemplified by lighter body, but with a very thick shield, literally a power field in front of it. That can absorb lots of damage.
Okay.
But once you chew through that, you're in trouble because they don't have much body.
Okay.
This is a bit like playing Hordes in that in Hordes, your war beasts can revitalize themselves. They can heal themselves. The warlock can kind of point a finger and spend some fury and heal them.
Okay.
It's not something that war machines can naturally do. They're just machines.
Right.
But we can, by allocating focus to them, we can regenerate those shields.
Cool.
So it kind of gives them some of that a little bit of a Hordes aspect to it.
From a video game perspective, sort of like what I saw with Space Marine, which is coming out soon, which looks awesome.
Speaking of which, they had a TV screen with Space Marine being played.
God, that looks so cool. And Harrison got to play it for a bit, and it was pretty awesome.
Kind of reminds me of the game Dynasty Warriors with the Space Marine.
Okay, I was thinking more Gears of War.
Okay, I can see that.
That was the one comparison I was getting. But... it's sort of like that where you take a beating and your shield gets down and you start taking damage. And if you go hide behind a corner and you wait about 10 seconds, whoop, your shield recharges.
That's a bit like Halo, too, yeah.
Yeah, Halo, same thing. That's kind of what I was thinking when I was...
It looks very sharp. And if you have a thing against orcs, this is the game for you because you get to beat up about 4,000 of them.
Dude, I'm buying that game. I'm not even a Space Marine player. I'm an orc player, but God bless America, that looks cool.
It looks neat. Well, THQ is the company that makes that particular video game.
Yep.
They did a remarkable job with Dawn of War 1, and the campaign of Dawn of War 2 was very fun. So my guess is that this is going to be a sharp product.
Yeah.
But for Privateer Press, your domination book is going to do the same thing that Wrath did. The biggest and most unusual thing from Wrath was the introduction of battle engines. There are small, medium, and large bases, and now there's huge base. And these include four new...
It's the Arachnarok base. They got the same thing kind of going on. They're making big Griblies.
This is where, since this is the Garage Game Reform, I can kind of say what I think, and that is Warhammer doesn't seem to quite have a grasp on their base sizes and what they mean. Okay. They do it because they make the base size based on the model. It's only the artist has the control over the base size. I wanted to make a really big spider, says the artist. Therefore, this is going to need a 100 by 150 base. The game players have to just say, well, that's what it is then. So maybe I'm not using it because it's too big. In this game, the base size matters. And it matters for line of sight. It matters for whether or not you can see it. And it also matters because if you've got a really big base with an armor of 20, I put my weak stuff behind it.
Oh, that's true.
Because it protects
the light.
Yeah.
In this game, they're cylinders. The size of the base gets X amount of height, and that's...
It is still a big base. I mean, we're talking about a base the size of a CD, or a DVD, or a Blu-ray, or whatever.
How many millimeters is that?
More than five? I don't know. It's big.
Well, I'm saying, I mean, I've seen...
Give me a millimeter ruler or CD, and I'll tell you.
Okay, no, because I mean, I'm just saying on a guess, because I know I play the Trollbloods. I've got 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's pretty
100
big.
100 millimeter, maybe? Think.
Possibly 100 millimeter.
Wow.
But the models are great. I love the K-Dor battle engine. It's this sort of galloping carriage with guns on it. They finally,
those must be some strong-ass horses.
I'm serious. Those horses are
solid lead.
Well, for Gen Con, they had a release of the new Menoth. It's like a choir organ with a sort of a...
It's a war altar.
War altar. That's exactly what it is. And there's one person tugging it, using only the will of Menoth to give him the strength to pull this one-ton thing.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
I gotta say, I like the fluff behind Menoth. It's funny
that you mentioned that. Two nights ago, I pulled the book off the shelf and said, I kind of want to reread these guys. They're cool.
I like their fluff, and then I was surprised as I was reading some of the Scorn fluff that the king who got deposed, was it from Signar?
Vintur Railthorn. Yeah, Vintur from Signar, who was the former king, made his way out to the east, and so
wasn't he like wrongly dethroned or some nonsense like that? I don't know all the fluff.
I don't know how wrongly. That's a question for the historians, really. I guess to the victor go the spoils. He was kind of a tyrant. Now, he made for a very efficient country, but at what point is fascism okay?
Aha.
And where do you draw the line? Was he wrong? I think that most Signar players would say he was a right bastard.
Okay.
But...
And he got thrown out, and so then he... Now, can you explain this to me? Can somebody explain? What the hell are the Scorn people?
What are they?
They look like vampires.
Well, that's their race. That they're the Scorn. That's their race. That's what they are. They're humanoids with very little in the way of hair. They have pointed ears.
But they're not,
very sharp
creatures.
I mean,
they're not vampires.
They're living creatures. They have, they're living entities.
But, I mean, they got the big fangs and they got the point. I mean, they look like Nosferatu.
They do.
And so I'm asking, are they blood drinkers? Or are they?
No. Okay. No. They're a living race known as the Scorn. They're thematically, they've lived under such awful conditions for so long that pain to them is just a motivator.
Aha.
If that makes any sense. But they did release in their latest New Quarter, which is their publication.
Right.
They just released new rules as a teaser for what's coming out in Domination.
Okay.
So we were able to see one of the new Warlocks for the Trolls.
Yay!
Jarl, who looks like it's sort of a two-pistol-wielding guy. Looks cool. And then one of the new Scorn guys. Now, Scorns, like I said, they're motivated by pain. And this guy... They have a cast called the Pain Givers.
Okay.
And this guy looks like a sort of an ascetic pain giver. Rather than give pain, he receives it upon himself.
Okay.
Sort of lacerates himself to gives himself strength.
Okay.
Just a really twisted and sort of awful concept. But there's a term, Scornergy. Synergy is when things work well together. Scornergy is what happens when you play the Scorn and you realize you have a lot of good options and none of them work together.
Okay.
So in this case, this guy's sort of the concept of Scornchy. Okay, if you hurt yourself a lot, you'll get all these benefits.
And that's, of course, if you hurt yourself a lot, you're
closer to death.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's what this guy is. He hurts himself. You can target him and hurt him, and he gains benefits.
I heard you talking about this with Lechman a little bit.
What's that?
Scornogy.
Oh, yeah.
And it almost sounds like the Wood Elf and the Ogre Kingdom rules. The idea is that you have all these cool things, but you can't take them all together and make them work the way that would be awesome. They're all sort of, well, this is great if I can do this, but I can't do this with it. So
kind of. In that case, though, it's you just don't get it all.
Okay.
In this case, it's you get this great benefit if you let a couple of your guys get killed.
Oh, jeez.
You know, that's kind of how they work. They have some of the unusual effects of the Crix, which is soul-stealing.
Okay.
You start to actually gain benefits. The Scorn have figured out how to trap souls.
Right.
And gain power from it. Their ancestors, they believe that when they die, their souls go to the void and are lost, and it's quite a horrifying prospect to them. So what they in their storyline, what they focus on doing is they venerate the best of them by capturing their souls and isolating them in places that would be considered an honor to those persons who died.
Oh, cool.
They kind of trap them in crystals or something, or stone or statues.
An interesting kind of concept.
So, yeah, those who live...
Can they be reborn?
They can't necessarily be reborn, but they can be accessed.
Okay.
And they can be communicated with.
Cool.
And if necessary, they can be put into statues, and those statues can come to life somewhat.
Okay.
Ancestral guardians, they're called. So they have some interesting concepts, and this particular guy, this new one in the magazine, yeah, he's motivated primarily by pain. So he's got like little blades and things sticking out through his skin. He looks a mess. So, all kinds of new stuff, and they clearly have the battle engine concept coming out for Hordes too. I saw what the Circle of Orboros, the werewolf guys,
right?
It looks like they've got something like almost looks like a gyroscope made of stone that was in the back of their magazine. It looks very interesting.
Cool.
I didn't see the model, but I saw art.
Now, I know that when Mark II came out, it advanced their storyline a little bit. Like, one of the things that you don't see with Warhammer.
It advanced it, all right.
Either Warhammer or 40K. You know, Warhammer, I mean, actually, 8th edition did push the storyline forward a little bit in that
it seems
chaos
like
is
we're
getting
closer
crazier.
To, yeah. It seems like the polar gates are affecting the world more than we thought.
Right. But like in 40K, you know, the Emperor's throne, the Stasis throne is broken. Literally, mankind seems to be weeks away from destruction, and you can't really advance.
Yeah, I think destruction's slated for next Tuesday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can't really advance that storyline without completely saying, oh, okay, we're fine.
I guess we have to, exactly.
Or, oh, crap, we're all dead and the game's over.
Yeah, would you mind playing fantasy for a while until we hit the reset button? Sorry.
Is Domination and what was the other one?
Wrath.
Are they advancing the storyline again?
I would assume that Domination is going to continue to move the story forward. They do tie into each other. War Machine and Hordes is the same world.
Right.
They're separated.
But has Wrath moved the storyline again?
Absolutely.
Okay.
One of the key elements of Wrath, I don't know if I... I guess, okay, guys, I'm going to give away some spoilers. I hope by now you've read the book. If you haven't and you're not and you're interested, skip ahead. But at this point, the book has been out for a while. You probably should have read it by now.
Dumbledore dies on page 586. I just saved you a few hundred dollars.
Yeah, there you go. Not Dumbledore!
So,
in any case, one of the primary elements that Wrath introduces, I told you that the Retribution has been trying to eliminate human warcasters. One of the other things they're trying to do is they've realized they received information that one of their supposedly lost gods isn't lost. He's just in Kador possession. That would be Nissor, the god of winter. Not necessarily the Iotians' favorite, but in fact their least favorite, but still a god's a god. We'll take him, you know. So a lot of their campaign has been against Kador, specifically Alexandra Sokolova. She's one of the Grey Lords, one of the wizards.
Right.
And in Wrath, they succeed in taking Nissor back, which is significant.
Does Kador know they have this god? I mean, is it purposely?
Kador, in general, perhaps does not necessarily realize they have the god. Alexandra Sarkova is more than aware that she has the god.
Okay. And so they get it back. So that's a huge power shift there.
That's a huge power shift for them. Kador kind of takes it on. Kador and Signar get it kind of from both ends. Signar, yeah. Crix is in a very powerful position right now. There is a there is a warcaster named Karchev the Terrible, Alexander Karchev. Mm-hmm. He's about 100 years old. He's almost dead.
Okay.
In fact, effectively did die, and then was revitalized and put into the body of a Kadoran warjack. And now he's a warcaster with the body of a warjack. And he's pretty awesome, and he's
pretty
amazing.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
He's terrific, and he's a neat warjack. Well, he's both. But here's the problem.
I'm going to take 5 focus and put it up back on myself.
Yeah, and that's about what he gets, too. There's you give it a take, right? The problem with that guy is that he met up with a Crixian warcaster named Denegra. And Denegra kicked his lily ass.
Okay.
So efficiently. One of her abilities is that she can turn things involuntarily incorporeal.
Okay.
Whether they want to be incorporeal or not.
Yeesh.
So she beat the snot out of him. This is like the last couple of pages of the book. And so it's a cliffhanger for us. We don't know what's going to happen. I'm a Kador player. I don't know what's going to happen to Karchev.
Nice.
But what she did is she beat him up to near dead, then went, reached inside of his warcaster armor, pulled his body out of basically his life support device.
Okay.
So now he's just a torso and a head.
Oh, my God.
Outside of his armor. And now she's telling her, like, thralls, keep him alive our way. So we don't know if in the next expansion, is he going to be a Crix thing now?
Cool.
What's going to happen?
Very interesting.
So, yeah, the story just changes. And I'm hoping Domination is going to be more of the same. War Machine and Hordes ties in together through that whole... You were mentioning Vintor Railthorn.
Right.
He had a lackey, a guy named Magnus.
Right.
Magnus is a mercenary, and he's had connection through to the Scorn. So I'm hoping to see a development in that storyline. And as for the Trollbloods, anything can happen with them. We'll definitely see an advancement in the storyline. I can't even speculate what they're going to be up to.
All right. Well, we've spent a good 15 minutes on War Machine... fluff,
yeah,
which is cool. But I should try to drag this back to Gen Con. Now, the last two places we want to hit, you did go to Fantasy Flight.
I did.
Fantasy Flight. I think I have traditionally been a bit more of a fan of Fantasy Flight than you.
While I my observation is they spend an awful lot of time and money on parts for a game,
making it cool, look really great,
shiny, and I've been disappointed with their rules as of late.
I still want to play Descent.
Yeah, but saying that, I'll talk about two games, both of which I got a chance to play while at Gen Con. One of which is going to reaffirm what I said, and the other one is going to blow it away.
Well, let's start with the one you didn't like as much, because I actually own that game.
Yeah,
so.
I want to try it again. I want to see if I'm going to change my mind. But I found when I had a chance to sit down and play Warhammer Invasion, I felt as though it was very pretty. I was very excited to get into it, and I was ultimately disappointed with the game itself. I felt like it leaned too hard on the license, and it didn't lean too enough on its own rules to make the game fun.
Now, if you haven't played this game, you get a tile, which is basically like your keep or your castle or your territory or your whatever.
Yeah.
And there are there's the left side, the front side facing your opponent, and the right side.
Each side means something. On your left side, I believe that's your kingdom, and the right side is your quest, and in front is the battlefield.
Right. And if your opponent can destroy two of those three, you lose.
You lose. Your kingdom is destroyed.
It's actually a very simple game,
mm-hmm.
All in all.
I would argue maybe too simple.
And I will say this. We've talked a little off air about what you think of the game, how, you know, you didn't think there was enough game there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I stopped buying the expansions, because I bought like 6 or 7 of them at, like, the game's like $30-some.
It's called a living card game, which means that about once a month they're going to be coming out with a new expansion, a new series of cards where you can start adding to the game.
Unlike Magic the Gathering, where you buy a box of boosters and you maybe don't even get all the cards. You buy the one box of cards for $14.99, and it's everything. It's everything. It's everything you need to play.
Correct. They're not collectible, but you want to try and keep getting these expansions as you can. They add to the game.
I bought the main game, which I think is like $40 or $50.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the Ulthuan expansion, where you actually get extra tiles. We get the High Elf and the Dark Elf.
It introduces new races to play.
Yeah, you get the territory cards, and that was like $30. And I think I bought like 6 expansions. And the thing is, I like the cards, I like the concept of the game, but I think I'm with you in that, at least in the beginning when I played it, It's very just kind of straightforward.
Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of... We played a four-player game.
Okay.
But there is no real four-player. It ended up just... We split it off into two versus two. Or one... two-player games. It's not really designed for a four-player.
No, it's a two-player game. Yeah. It really is. And maybe that was part of the problem you had with it.
It lacks... Yeah, there's no interaction. It's just sort of a slugfest.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of pick, you know, like I like to play the dwarves, there's Empire, there's... Now, it does say once you get the hang of the rules down, because it comes out, it tells you to pre-make a deck. It gives you a list of the cards to take, and you basically play sort of the pre-made deck game. Once you get into the game and you start to understand it more, you can start to... It's kind of like Magic. You can buy a starter deck, which lets you to play, and once you understand the game, you can start making your own decks. I never got to the point where I was making my own deck because I was always sort of playing early learning games with Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's part of the problem, was too simple, but at this point, I think I've played it a couple times, and I guess the problem is I don't know if I want to take the time to really construct decks. And
even with a constructed deck, the question is the game fun? Is it that much fun, or should I be playing something else?
I think it was fun. Is it fun enough for me to want to take the time to figure out how to build good decks and make it more fun? Because I think it would be more fun if you're really constructing your own little combos and it's just like Magic, the Gathering. You can buy a starter deck and have a decent game, or you could sit there and tailor a deck to the way you like to play.
Yeah.
The same thing that happened to me with Magic the Gathering, I kind of feel with this too, is do I want to take the time to buy all these cards and tailor decks for a game that is fun, but I don't know how much more fun it's going to be if I tailor a deck.
If I'm going to be building a deck, I think I'd rather play Magic.
Yeah. I mean, it's don't get me wrong. I own the game, and it's fun, and if Harrison, you know, hey, let's pull this out. Okay, we can pull.
It's okay.
I mean, of all the Fantasy Flight games I've played, it's probably the one that has wowed me the least and cost me the most, which is really sort of a bad combo, I think.
Yeah, it's a killer.
It's fun.
I can't recommend it.
Yeah.
Try it. You might feel differently than I do, and I'm not putting down Fantasy Flight specifically. I just don't think that this is their best effort. I think they leaned on a license and didn't follow through with the game.
I will say that if you look, once again, obviously there'll be a thread for this episode on our forums. And if you've played it a bunch and we have it completely wrong, please tell us.
Well, I will tell you, David, on the air. I'll play it again. I want to try it again.
Oh, yeah.
I played with the dwarves, actually. They were okay.
Slayers are actually pretty fun to play with. You can put them on their little quests and bump them up.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I played against, was it Orcs, I think? And
you
then
have
the other,
to.
Yeah. And it was all right. Mm-hmm. I want to try it again, but I was not wowed. And the people I played with agreed. They said, you know, there's not enough here. So I'd like to try it again in a different setting and see what I think.
It actually confirms everything you say about Fantasy Flight, where it looks good, it should be good, it's got all the pretty cards, it's got great cards, great tokens, looks
beautiful.
Fantastic. I love the look of this game. It sucked me in with it.
And left me hungry.
I think that's kind of how I felt, too.
But I don't want to end Fantasy Flight on that note. Let's wrap up.
No, because I've played other Fantasy Flight games, and I love their games. I am a huge Fantasy Flight fan.
I've had a recent run of disappointment, so I'm going to end with let's talk about a new game that they just came out with, and the folks at Fantasy Flight didn't even know it was going to be ready. It was a surprise to them when it showed up ready to go, but they only had a short stack, and I will assure you that it sold out on the day they released it because it was that good.
And that kind of surprises me because this game was at Games Day, and they had a ton of them at Games Day. They were demoing them. They were selling them. I almost bought it, but I didn't think you'd play it with me.
Well,
and now you find out you love it. I ordered it from UGG.
I love it. I let's say the name. It's Blood Bowl Manager, the card game by Fantasy Flight. What I was worried about when I sat down to try it, my first question was, why should I play this if I've got Blood Bowl? And my friend Chris said, just trust me. So we started it. And Blood Bowl Manager card game is not a game of Blood Bowl. It is a game of a season of it managing a team in Blood Bowl.
And the option is not to win the Blood Bowl
although
or the
certainly
Chaos
helped.
Cup.
It certainly helps.
The
goal is fans. You want to be the most popular team at the end of it all. You want to ensure your place as the manager of this team that everyone loves.
You want to make sure you have a job next year.
You want to make sure you have a job. And the way to do that is to have spectacular plays, to have outrageous players, and to do really well, and to be the center stage of all those like sort of flash moments that make the paper. So you focus on laying down plays that are pivotal plays throughout the week, and then you lay down, and then you sort of build players that commit to these different plays. Describing it is a pain to do, but I will tell you this. The game was intense. Every turn mattered. Like, both of us were sort of, it was scratching our chins and going, ooh, what do I want to do next? And you've got a team of players, and you can hire on freebooters to your team, but you only have about half of them accessible to you at a time, because we're talking about an entire, like, you know, a whole several games worth of plays that you're sort of committing players to.
Huh.
It was neat. You know, you've got full old favorites like Morgenthorg is in there, and Bone Ripper who smashes face, and then you've got I tried, my first game was with the Skaven, who don't exactly smash face at all except for Bone Ripper, but I was able to outmaneuver everybody and make sure I had possession of the ball when those big plays needed to be made, and it was fun. And orcs, of course, just sort of clobber their way through. And what a remarkable game! And you know they're going to come out with supplements, and this is a case where I go, bring them on! I can't wait.
Now, I'm going to say two things here. First of all, Blood Bowl, the video game. And, in fact, in Blood Bowl, the rules, when you download the PDF and play the rules.
By Cyanide.
Well, yeah, the Cyanide video game and the regular Blood Bowl rules that you can download off the GW website.
Mm-hmm.
They got the picture of those two announcers. That's Bob and what's the other guy's name? Jim?
Jim and Bob? I don't remember.
Now, Bob's the guy who Bob talks like, you know, he's an ogre. And he's huge, and I realize he's an ogre because he actually says it in one of the Cyanide games. And I never realized what Jim was.
And he's an elf, right?
He's a vampire.
Is he?
That's why he's got them glass. I think he's, unless I'm dead wrong, Harris and I were talking about it, and he kept talking about Bob and talking about, there were some comments, and he's always got the sunglasses on, and if you look at the new Cyanide game, mm-hmm. the vampires, when they're playing, always are wearing sunglasses.
Ah.
And I was just like, it never clicked to me who these two guys were. I got to say, and I know this is totally off the topic of just what you did at Gen Con,
mm-hmm.
Blood Bowl is quickly becoming one of my all-time favorite games ever in the history
brilliant.
Of ever.
It's brilliant.
The game itself is brilliant. This Blood Bowl manager I'm excited for, the teams I'm excited for, the video game I like. People, if you're not playing Blood Bowl or if you've never played Blood Bowl, you really should try some Blood Bowl.
Agreed.
It is a hell of a fun game.
Agreed.
You could play it as a one-off just with friends. You could start. In fact, I know you, me, and Harrison just started writing up teams just to play against each other, just to build up some development and have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
Just playing Blood Bowl and developing teams. I know there's tons, especially down at the Battle Bunker in Downers Grove. There are tons of Blood Bowl tournaments that go on. The guys from Zlurpcast, I know, run and promote a bunch of them. So hats off to the guys like Johnny P and Extreme, and obviously the guys from Three Die Block, if you ever listen to that podcast.
Chance and Polly.
They've got two leagues, and those leagues have three divisions in each league with a bunch of players. And once again, on the Blood Bowl topic, but I started listening to Three Die Block, which if you're not listening and you like Blood Bowl, that's Slurpcast and Blood Bowl, Three Die Block are good to listen to. But
in your face, Lions.
In your face, Lions! But, you know, you start listening, it's like they talk about a team on Three Die Block, then they have a little cheering, they have little, you know, subsections they cover, and then the end is they are actually updating their league games. And in the beginning, I'm like, dude, what do I care what their scores were and this stuff? And I started to get hooked on that section of the show. It's like every week you hear about the same thing. And I don't see these games, but it's almost like, you know, following regular football, where it's like I watch the Bears games, I watch the Packers games, but I still keep track of what's going on in the whole league.
Yeah.
And you start, because they play them for two or three seasons. They play it until the team really does, you know, they've taken it as far as they feel they could take it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hear these same leagues, and it's like I've come to care about different teams and different, you hear, there was a fatality and you know, egg, bacon, scrambler, cheese guy that, you know, because they make up funny names for all their guys.
The Egginsville Scramblers.
The Egginsville Scramblers for the Halflings. And this guy got killed. And I'm like, oh, no, not that guy. And it's just like, Blood Bowl has really, in the past 18 months, hooked me.
Oh yeah, Blood Bowl is a terrific game. I'm glad that you feel that way because I love it.
Blood Bowl has hooked me. It is probably in, I would say, I would list it in probably my top 10 games of all time that are not tabletop wargaming. You take tabletop wargaming out of it because that's sort of a different thing. But if you're talking about board games, and
well, it's a miniatures board game. It's really quite unique. There's nothing else out there like Blood Bowl.
It's fantastic. I absolutely love it.
Although that's part of the reason I enjoy Necromunda so much, because it has that same sort of developing team tech mentality.
And I will say this much. I am so glad you liked this game because, like I said, I saw it at Games Day, and you were standing in line with Steele waiting for the thing, and I watched these guys play for about 15 minutes. I'm like, this looks like really fun. But I didn't pick one up because I didn't...
You didn't know if you were going to have a player.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now I know I do, so I actually talked to Kathleen today and told her to order it.
Hell yeah, you got a player? Oh, it's so good. Oh, my God. Such a good game. So, guys, yeah, the takeaway from all of this is go to your friendly local game store and ask for a copy of Fantasy Flight's Blood Bowl Manager card game. You will not be disappointed.
And if they don't have it, tell them to order it.
Or my name isn't Skip Stevenson.
Your name isn't Skip Stevenson, because I'm Skip Stevenson. Actually, Caleb McCoy thinks he's Skip Stevenson.
Apparently he is.
That was great. I love that he put Skip Stevenson's face as his avatar on our forums, and that his little quote under the picture is just in all caps, Skip Stevenson.
We should clarify, just get it out there in the open. The whole reason we're obsessed with Skip Stevenson, we were playing Mad Libs about 20 years ago with our friends, and there's no chance of us doing drinking or anything of that sort. No chance whatsoever.
No. We were completely just sober. No, there's bunch of
sober.
Late teens, early 20s kids.
Clear-minded.
Playing
clean cut.
Mad Libs.
Hair wasn't long.
We weren't weird or under the influence of anything.
No chance of Ren and Stimpy.
No.
None.
Because it was Mike Ford who would just shout out his name whenever it was the name of a famous person.
Although I want to say that was probably John Doyle, our good friend John Doyle, who I think... just in a spur of creative genius, decided that the exclamation needed at the time for the Mad Libs was Skip Stevenson.
Skip Stevenson!
And that was it. We were hooked.
And he stuck.
Yeah, so that's our exclamation of choice.
Yep. Unless you're Mike Ford. And then it's, hi, Gettysburg. I'm Abraham Lincoln. That was the original Gettysburg address, by the way. It just didn't quite have the zing of the original.
Hello, Gettysburg!
I'm Abraham Lincoln. So...
All right.
Here we are reliving our past for people who don't care. One last booth, and I saved this one for last on your list because I think you have the most info.
There's a lot under the hood, yeah.
And because we really like it.
Yeah.
And plus, we've got a contest.
Yes, we do. Let's talk about Mantic Games and Ronnie Renton and Joe and Pat and all the other great guys from Mantic Entertainment who are just so friendly. And so, they remember us. They're just cool. They're obviously excited about their product, and they should be. There's a lot of cool stuff coming out. So let's...
Now, they did put out a video on YouTube, and I don't think you saw it, but it's a two-minute video that Ronnie put out with their three-year plan.
Okay.
And it was completely unwatchable. And I hate to say, he was on the far side of a room at the end of a table with no microphone. You could barely hear him. He had a little whiteboard by him, and it had his three-year plan. It was, you know, Kings of War beta. That was the first year. It's all done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this year in September, they're going to be coming out with a new they've redone the rules.
Yes, they are. I mean, it sounds like you can still get everything you want for free, but they are going to offer a book that you can buy. The price point for that in the United States will be about $10.
And I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I've printed out the PDF, I think, like three or four times because I keep losing it. But
well, the nice thing about this book is that all the rules will be in place. This will be nice and official. It will also include all the new armies. I'm saying all the armies, including, it sounds like, some new information about new playing pieces to try, new items for your list, of which there will be 8 armies. For those who don't know what they are, it sounds
right now we have dwarfs, abyssal dwarfs, elves, orcs, and undead. We've got 5.
Right.
So, Chris?
The way I'm looking at this, from what he's described, it kind of sounds like every army has their counterpart.
Okay.
So that, or dwarves and abyssal dwarves.
Dwarves have abyssal dwarves.
Elves have the Twilightkin.
Which is the
evil elves?
Evil elves,
the orcs.
Some might say they're a rather dark version,
rather
of
dark
the elves.
Yeah. Even though their skin is quite pale.
You paint them, do you just paint them purple and black? Because they're emo dark, dark on the inside,
but pale and delicious on the outside.
Okay, so we got dwarves and abyssal dwarves. We got elves and Twilightkin.
The orcs, you could argue that their counterpart would be the goblins, which is a separate army.
So there is going to be a goblin army.
Our goblins are confirmed.
I am excited for that.
Me too.
Very excited for that. Not just to see what models they have, but what this army is going to bring to the table.
Well, the orcs, when you look at them, they're all choppy and gnarly and nasty, and their artillery, their ballistics, are at a bare minimum. You can take like sort of...
I would argue almost everybody's ballistics and artillery is at a bare minimum.
I do pretty good with what I have.
Well, the elves do okay, but
elves are doing fine.
But if you're talking, like, I would, for Undead, I would never give up my shields for bows.
No, yeah.
Undead. Even the dwarves have crappy shooting.
Whoa.
I think they hit on five pluses.
That's pretty good. Have you seen what the other people hit on?
The sixes, but as soon as you put some,
But remember, two or three wounds on a small unit is significant.
True, but I'm saying as soon as you put the, what do you call it? As soon as you put the long distance or anything else, they're hitting on sixes with half the dice just like everybody else. It seems like they have one more step to go to get to half dice.
Well, remember that they're not going to be moving with most of their long-range shooting. They've got guns and they've got crossbows. So,
right.
Yeah, you're going to have to suffer from the long range, so they'll be hitting on sixes, but you're not going to be moving.
Okay, so you might get your full dice. I'm just saying, Undead has only one step. They're already on sixes, and one step they're at half dice.
They're not going to...
They're one step removed from that, though.
They're not going to get much in the way of shooting, but the dwarves, right. You will get your full dice likely for your crossbows, for your guns, and you also have cannons, organ guns, flame belchers.
Oh, okay, well, the big war machine, I'm just talking about, I guess, I'm talking about hand weapon shooting. I was working on a dwarf list, and I was just like, eh. I'm going to keep the shield and skip the crossbows.
I guess that's the big strength of the Abyssal Dwarves. We've got shooting.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, we do.
All right, so back to it, though. So, I'm sorry, I cut you off. So
that's
the
right. It sounds like the goblins are going to be sort of the antithesis of the orcs, where the orcs are up close.
Say that five times fast.
Antithesis.
Thank you. That's not fast, but I'll give you the point.
Unique New York.
Stop that. I can't do that one.
So anyway, it sounds like the goblins are going to be the antithesis of the orcs. Rather than be upfront and brutal and gnarly and nasty, they're going to be conniving and cunning and clever and quite fearful of getting close. So they'll probably have, like, one of the models I saw, they had a big stick and they were prodding a big monster in front of it.
And I
put
like
this between the bad guy and me.
And I like this because this is one of these things that we all know, I mean, we've said it before, Mantic takes a lot of flack for being the quote-unquote Warhammer ripoff.
Yeah, they're definitely polarizing the audience. It's true, they do. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say I've heard some criticism from folks who take umbrage from the fact that they are kind of a mushroom industry, but they're going more and more into their own.
And I like that these two separate armies that I like that there's an orc army and a goblin army and that they're very different from each other.
The less they have to lean on just being a supplement so you can play Warhammer, the more they are able to say, we are our own entity. We got our start by leaning on those who play Warhammer, but now we want people to play Kings of War with our toys, and they're starting to go their own direction. It's kind of exciting.
That's what I'm saying. One of the things I'm really looking forward to with the goblins is that idea that it's its own army. Yes, you can play an all-goblin army in Warhammer, or you can play an all-orc army in Warhammer, but it's still the same army. You're just choosing to delete half of your choices to stick with one thing. I rarely see an all-orc army. Oftentimes, you do see an all-night goblin army.
The first time I ever saw one was at Bits. Very first time I ever saw an army where the goblins, he's like, I don't have any on purpose. Go fluff.
And that's kind of cool.
It was awesome.
But I really do like that. I really do like that Mantic has made them two separate and distinct armies.
I do, too. It's neat. It's going to be a lot of fun to see which way they develop. We don't have that list out yet. As of this recording, we don't see that list. I don't know what's going to be in it, but it should be a lot of fun.
And it's only a day or two until last week's Mantic Journal, the weekly email, said it's supposed to be in this week, but it's going to be next week because Alessio's still tweaking. So
no problem. I'm looking
excited.
Forward to it. Yeah.
Now we've got one last army.
Well, we've got technically two. Yeah, we already know the undead.
Who's their nemesis?
Their antithesis. The antithesis of the undead skeletons and zombies and ghouls would be living human beings.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so humans. So we're talking about army from Ronnie himself. Says that the army is going to be... I asked him to use Warhammer terms since that makes the most sense. He's like, okay, fair enough. Think of something somewhere in between what you understand the Empire to be and what you understand the Bretonians to be, which means that there are war machines, we do have artillery, and there are guns and things like that. Well, I don't know about guns, but...
But there's going to be cavalry, too.
But there'll be lots and lots of horse lords as well. And so that should be a lot of fun. So finally, Kings of War will see human beings come to light.
Cool.
It sounds exciting, and what he was able to tell me was that these are the main armies he's going to be focusing on for the next year. So we'll see new miniatures. We'll see new army lists in this new supplement.
Well, we're just finally this month going to get all the orc models coming
out. Yes, and they look great.
Yeah, and so that'll be the sixth army. So he's only got two more armies. That's the fifth army. So he needs three more armies will be coming out models,
humans, dark elves, and goblins
in three in the next year. So every about 4 months, we can expect to see. And on average, you figure about every 4 months, we can expect to see models and stuff for new armies. I'm so excited.
Me too. The supplement itself, I think you said maybe 50 pages, $10, something like that.
So are the rules still going to be 12 or 13 pages?
I think the rules, the rules be relatively similar. I think the biggest change he wanted to recommend is it sounds like there's going to be some minor tweaking to the nerve system to make it easier for people.
Okay.
Rather than have to do the take your nerve and subtract it from the total of 2d6 plus damage, I think what he's going to do instead is something to the tune of your nerve will be a lot higher, and all you need to do is take your damage plus your die roll and exceed that nerve.
Okay.
So if you like, if you have a nerve of 18, all you need to do is make your 2d6 plus your damage exceed that.
Well, when you get a game that you put out, and I will say this much, you get a game, and like I said, I have already said several times that Alessio is, I mean, I think most of us would agree, if you play and you like Warhammer, Alessio is kind of a genius.
Yeah, I'll shake his hand when I meet him.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, I mean, sort of try not to be a dork I was a dork around Jen Haley, but what can you do?
Look at Shuro. The guy took chess and made it something new and different and exciting, you know? He makes this game. He makes it short, sweet, simple, and it works.
But still fun and efficient.
And the one complaint I keep hearing about the game from people who have complaints is that that nerve thing is confusing. Now, personally, it confused me for the first half of the game, and I got through it. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here. I'm better or smarter than other people. I didn't find it all that confusing once I'd done it a few times.
It's just a bit. It's a bit more mental acrobatics than normal, which is just add this together. Instead, it's okay. Wait, I've got to take this result and actually subtract it from these two other sums.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be easier. Now it's simply just this number is what you're going to need to meet.
But you figure if they were going to tweak it, it is the one big complaint. So it's going to get tweaked. So
I'll take my hat off because once Ronnie explained it to me, it's like, oh, that does make it easier, doesn't it? And it's the same system. He's like, yep. So that book will be out hopefully, sounds like the next couple of months, and it will add to each of the armies. So each of your armies are growing.
Oh, so we're going to get more choices.
More choices.
Cool.
Now, one of the more exciting things he mentions that he'd like within about a year's time, he'd like to come out with a full-on book. A genuine Kings of War book that he hopes to be, I think he mentioned, please forgive me, Ronnie, if I'm getting this wrong, over 100 pages, maybe 150 pages.
So there's going to be fluff?
Fluff, quite a lot more. I did directly tell him one of the strongest weaknesses of this game is the lack of storyline, and it sounds like he'll be developing it. Here he has several ideas, one of which is he understands that he's concerned that figures like, I'll give an example, and the example he kind of provided me was, it concerns him when you see someone like Karl Franz on the battlefield, because in one fell swoop, the Empire can fall, because your king's on the battlefield, and in theory, he can die. And maybe those kind of figures shouldn't be on the table, but he's going to write the kind of fluff that will allow for small principalities, your armies to be sort of find their way within the storyline in your own heart,
okay,
and make their own way. But
so you can have, you'll have lords and heroes, but not necessarily special characters.
Maybe not characters at that level, but there are special characters. In fact, if you find, I brought a journal with me tonight. I'll show it to you later. There are Lich Kings and that sort of thing, and interesting stuff that you don't see in the book right now that are kind of unusual and individual. But they don't break the bank, and they don't break the back of the entire faction if should they die, that sort of thing. And you wanted to accentuate that Kings of War doesn't imply that the kings are on the table. But the Lords of War, really, is maybe...
Okay. And it makes sense, though. I mean, the king doesn't always ride out to war. That's why he's got generals and lord. I mean,
exactly.
You don't see the president. I mean, the president is our commander-in-chief of the United States Army.
And it would be downright foolish to expose
to put him
to
in a
gunfire.
Tank,
yeah.
You know? Drive the tank closer. I want to hit him with my sword.
Get out
the...
Yeah.
God. Okay,
but,
so
we should hope for within a year or so, I think he mentioned about a 150-page book, and he's looking at a price point in American dollars, about $50.
Now, and I don't have a problem with that. I'm going to come out right now and say that.
I don't mind it a bit.
Now, hopefully he'll still keep the PDF free.
I think he should, but I also think it makes sense that ultimately, if he wants this game to be taken seriously, you need to have a product that people can buy.
Yes.
And it's better to have it that way because it means I have one book, I've got all the rules, and I don't have to go between a Mantic journal or a PDF that I downloaded.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Makes sense.
It's actually a lot easier for me to have a book.
And I think it would be nice. I will say this. I don't necessarily, especially for this game with the simplicity of it and the elegance of it, as long as it's a book. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I want a book. You know how you were telling me how like the War Machine book has all the factions sort of listed in the main book? You got that?
You get a smattering of all of them. Yeah. You don't get everything.
Right. But you still have... I guess what I'm saying is I don't necessarily want to see army books on top of this book. I mean, the game seems simple enough where if you can keep it all into one book, that would please me greatly.
You know what? If this game is strong enough to survive, say, the next 5 years, mm-hmm. and I don't see any reason why it can't, I'm okay with anything goes. I want to see it take off. I want to see it popular
True.
Enough. I want to see a tournament.
Yeah. Well, 5 years. Okay, 5 years from now, then I could totally be eating my words. But
well, I don't think
for now
I don't think
I'd
eating
like
your words.
See,
I just
yeah.
say I want to see them stick to their guns for the time being.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see a product come out that I can buy. I want to support the hobby. This is a good way to do it. I'm glad that the rules are free. We're playing the game. I love the miniatures. I want to see them continue on. I want to see continued improvements. And so far, they've managed to do all of those things with flying colors. I can't say that any particular model that they've released is worse than the one before it. They've all been great.
They've all gotten better.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I agree with you 100% on their undead line. They've been spectacular. The orcs are really nice. Everything they do seems to
yep.
be really sharp. They had the Twilight Kin sorceress there, and she looks really good.
And like I said, the only weakness I saw in their model line is really coming from a Warhammer Fantasy point of view. Because I said with the lack of interchangeability of different weapon types.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But that's a total Warhammer point of view because there are no necessarily not a lot of changeability in weapon types.
They're there. It depends on the army. Mm-hmm. I have to deal with it sometimes with my Abyssal Dwarves or even with regular Dwarves. Mm-hmm. You can swap out like axes and shields for something else. And some of my guys are molded with shields whether I like them to or not.
Yes.
So for those guys, I'm kind of stuck. So the problem's still there.
And
but
how you deal with that is the problem I hope they can solve, because if I'm swapping out for bows, like I said, I'm not I tried it once, I'm not swapping out my undead for bows anymore.
No, I don't think
but
you
there
should.
Aren't even there, to my knowledge, there's not even I don't think I can buy any bow
miniatures.
Yeah, there's no, they don't come on the sprues. There's no bows on the sprues because I've literally over almost 300 Mantic undead models at the moment. I've got 100 ghouls. I've got almost 100 zombies.
It's a blank spot in their miniatures repertoire right now. If they intend to keep that going, then they either need to change the list or change what they offer.
Yeah, so. Or do something so I can at least figure out what, so that my opponent is not confused when it's on the table.
Or just a big piece of paper that says, bow.
Well, like I said, they don't the WYSIWYG is not as necessary for them because the... Like, as we talked about in the Kings of War episode, mm-hmm. the 40 model horde is a single playing piece.
Correct. It's diorama.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry that each model, because it doesn't so much matter because, but still, if I do have an option for a different weapon, if I don't have it on the field, then how does my opponent know what's what and keep track of it? And that's my only really concern with their model.
Agreed.
Line.
Agreed. I will say that for their price point, this is a problem I tend to overlook. As long as they keep things the way they're going, I'm going to be more forgiving. I would like to see continued improvement. That's something mm-hmm. I'd like to see improved.
But I will say, and I said it during the Kings of War review, for my undead army, I've bought a ton of their ghouls, and I bought a ton of their zombies, and I've pretty much kind of held off or stopped on buying the skeletons because while I can use them for Kings of War, they didn't translate as well into my Warhammer Fantasy army.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I want to be able to use them for both, so I'm sticking with GW Skeletons and Graveguard.
Well, I like their skeletons more.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, but like the stuff that doesn't need weapons changes, doesn't need the variety, I've got it all. But that's the one thing that sort of held me off on that. So I did want to I want to be honest. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I think anyone who listens to the show knows I really enjoy Kings of War, and I like Mantic's models. But that's the one thing that kind of sticks in my craw a little bit.
I gotcha.
Puts a bit of the kibosh on my buy-in more skeletons.
Well, tying into, I wanted to switch topics just a little bit, transition from Kings of War. They make a Kings of War product that's actually a standalone game called Dwarf King's Hold.
Which, to for all intents and purposes, is sort of a fantasy space Hulk.
Fantasy space Hulk, or you can even argue it's like, the tiles remind me a lot of Warhammer Quest.
It's kind of a dungeon crawl.
Totally. Totally. It's great.
Different scenarios.
Really fun to play. I was able to play this at Adepticon. They had it for sale there, and it looks like they're doing well with the game. It's really worth trying.
Sold out before I could buy it.
Yeah.
Well,
they had more of them here. And there's going to be, this is a plot point, folks. We'll go back to Dwarf King's Hold later. But they finally came out with a new, it's like a standalone supplement. It's Dwarf King's Hold. But there are two versions now. There's Dead Rising, which is the dwarves against the undead in the dwarven catacombs, in the dwarven holds. The undead have been rising up, and now the dwarves have to defend themselves against skeletons and the undead within their own realm.
Right.
Now, the other version of Dwarf King's Hold is actually called the Green Menace, and no dwarves in it, actually. It's actually the orcs versus the elves in a dungeon setting.
Okay.
And it's really cool. I mean, it's the same game, and it's really cool, and I recommend that folks give this a try. If you've not seen it, see if you can get it at your local game store. It's a lot of fun to play.
Cool. This is actually hitting, we're hitting another 45-minute mark. Let's take a quick pause, just throw a bumper in here, and then we'll be right back, and we'll wrap up with what else came from Mantic and your final thoughts on Gen Con.
Sounds great.
Okay.
I had this gym teacher in school who talked like this. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, boy. Yeah, buddy, 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 boy, 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 boy. Yeah. Hey, baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy, baby, boy, buddy, baby, boy. Yeah, 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 baby, baby, boy. Yeah, buddy. I liked him a lot because he gave me a D. Sure I did. When I told my mom about it, she got so excited, she baked me a cake. The end.
Okay, and we're back.
All right.
This is actually, we're hitting the point that I am really excited to hear about.
Yeah, and you know what? You could tell Mantic was too. You could tell that Ronnie was really excited about this project. We're talking about Warpath, their new beta, the new game that's coming out, science fiction-based game.
Okay.
It's going to be skirmish, so round bases.
I've read the rules. I like what I've read so far.
It looks very good.
It's very similar to Kings of War, except that you have a lot more options because you can take tanks, you can take planes, mm-hmm. you can take all sorts of what you would expect in a sci-fi game.
You can tell that they're excited about this, and I asked them a little bit about it. And you know what? It stems from the fact that Kings of War, obviously they knew at the start they sort of had to. They had to blossom from the shadow of someone else's game.
Right.
From this is all their own doing.
Yeah.
You know, Warpath is their creature. It's their entity. It's their product. And they're able to do it without having to lean so much on someone else's ideas.
I think one of the criticisms is they made a game for a model line. They had the models, a lot of people are like, well, they just threw together a game so they had an excuse to keep making their models, which...
Agreed. I don't think that argument holds water in the long run because... Mantic had the last laugh. The game rules.
I'm just saying it is a criticism.
Yeah.
Warpath, and I know people are going to look at it and say it's just Mantic's 40K, but I've read the rules. It's simple.
Yeah, but
looks like a ton of fun, and it's different. It is different.
Well, being not really a 40K player, I kind of want to give this a try, and I continue to not really be all that, especially, I have no harsh feelings toward 40K. That was actually something I played before Fantasy. I don't want to play it. I don't want to commit, but I want to try this.
Like I said, I read the rules and I liked it. There's a lot of similarities to the way the dice works. The mechanics are very similar to Kings of War, but you've got all this different stuff going on now.
Mm-hmm. The scale of the special rules are different because this is futuristic.
Yep.
So you see things like crushing strength. But you see it at levels like 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, that will probably need to be what you use to take out a tank.
You have armor piercing, which is like before. One of the neat rules they have with this is, just to give you a sense of idea, when you hit a tank, you know how in 40K you have a front armor rating and then the side one's a little lower and the back one's the lowest?
Yeah.
This is the armor rating for the tank, I believe, if I read the rules correctly, is the same all around.
Okay.
If you have armor piercing, you get a +1 to wound on the side and a +2 from the back. If you don't have armor piercing, you get nothing. So instead of like in 40K, where if you're shooting at the side, you could be aiming at the treads or you're aiming at the gas tank in the back. If you've got a regular old gun that's not armor piercing, whether you shoot it front, side, or back, it's all the same. But if you've got armor piercing, if you can really get in there, you get bonuses to there is still a point to getting it, but it's like certain weapons will have the ability to do better from the side and the rear. Whereas if you're just standing there with your pistol, let's face it, you're standing there with your...
You're not
I got my
M16
and I'm shooting at the front of the tank, I'm shooting at the back, I'm still shooting with an M16, I ain't going to do anything to it.
No, you'll just make some pretty marks.
And I may damage it, but I'm not going to get any bonus because I'm in the back as to the front, you know, with that. Lots of little rules like that. Once again, and I haven't played it because they ain't got no models for it yet, and the rules just came out.
Well, I saw some models for it.
Okay, let's hear it.
They're the best models I've ever seen them do.
Wow. Okay, so
that's
hands
it.
Down.
Hands down, they're the best models I've ever seen them do.
Better than the dwarves, better than the undead, better than the orc stuff you've seen so far.
Better than those. Better than those. Have you...
Now, what have you... What did?
I only saw
there?
Two types, and they were both Forge Fathers. Forge Fathers are their...
Squats.
Squats. They're space dwarves. But... how do I describe this? Do you know how, like, you look at your old TV and then you look at a new TV and it's like, wow, that's so crystal clear. I can see the difference.
Right.
You look at a metal model and it's hard to see the detail. And then you look at it again in fine cast and your eyes just focus on it. And you realize, my God, I can see everything. I can see all this detail. I can see what it's supposed to be.
Right.
That's what these looked like. Everything just made sense. The lines are very clear. Remember when we were just having a conversation just off the mic, not for the listeners, but Dave, you remember I was just discussing with you what I told Dave for the listeners out there was in the case of miniatures, we were talking about painting, and I was describing sometimes you look at a model and you almost play paint by numbers. When you look at a coloring book and you can see clear lines and you want to keep your colors in certain spaces.
Right.
I look at this model and every line is clearly defined. It will be a painter's joy to paint this model.
Really?
Everything is crystal clear. The art that they use in Warpath to they drew up a couple of images from Studio McVeigh for the Forge Fathers.
Okay.
These models are spitting image. They're right off the page.
So, like, so I have the PDF sitting around here somewhere, and we've looked at it, and they've got the pencil. They look like they're pencil sketches. They're
pretty
detailed.
Yes.
But they're still, I mean, they haven't gone and erased all the extra lines and stuff, and there are these, like, just totally, I mean, dwarfs walking around in, like, just tons of armor with these big honking guns the size of their arm. And they look cool as hell.
And that's what they were. They were just right off the page. The artist was able to say, I can use this exactly the way it is, and you have a three-dimensional version of it. They looked great. This game is going to be good.
Cool.
I know a lot of detail on some of the armies that are going to be coming out, the factions. One of the things that you had mentioned was it's unusual that the Forge Fathers should be allied with orcs, the Marauders.
Well, that's because I couldn't figure out who the Marauders were because I'm like, okay, there's the only two armies you have drawings of in the beta rules for Warpath are Forge Fathers, which are obviously dwarfs, and then there's these orc-looking models. And the only other list they put out was Marauders, and I'm like, well, if those are Marauders, how the hell can they be under the list of allies? Because dwarves and orcs have never gotten along.
It turns out that might be just a touch of filler. Marauders are going to be a neutral race. I believe the Forge Fathers will be a good race, and the Forge Fathers are good, and Marauders are neutral. Orcs will work for just about anybody. Mercenaries.
So they're mercenaries. So they're in it to make a buck and they love to fight.
Just
so
they want to mix it up.
Sure, pay me to go fight. I don't care who I'm going to fight. Just pay me to fight.
Perhaps not quite as mindless as 40K would have you believe, but clearly they have a lust for destruction.
Cool.
They just want to mix it up. I know that some of the other races sound very interesting. In this particular world, the corporation, the human being corporation, is an evil army.
So the humans are evil.
Humans are clearly... this group are clearly bad guys. Think of it as the evil empire.
Nice.
Okay. And so...
So it's Disney? I'm sorry. I love Disney. Don't
I find your lack of Mickey disturbing.
They're totally the evil empire. As much as I love them, I've totally drank the Kool-Aid for Disney, but...
It's funny. I used to work in culinary, as you know, David, and one of the things that our chefs used to say is, listen, guys... Go work for Disney if you want to go work for Disney on the culinary side. Just bear in mind, they're not the happiest place on earth. which is, of course, the
yeah.
They're pretty rough to work for.
Yeah.
But in any case, so we've got Empire.
Okay.
Evil Empire. I don't know if that means they'll look like Space Marines or if they'll look like Star Wars, or I don't know what the concept art is, but they're bad guys. So you do have a Rebel Army, and the Rebel Army is, I asked, does that imply then low technology and lots of them, or does that imply high technology because they've stolen the best scientists? He's like, you're going to see both. You're going to see really high-end technology from stuff that they were being able to smuggle from other groups, and you're going to see the lowest-end garbage ramshackled together ragtag army. So there'll be a Rebel Army, which is good, a Corporation Army, which is bad. There'll be the Marauders, which are neutral, the Forge Fathers, which are good.
They did say there's going to be 8 factions for this as well.
Yeah, there's a Plague Army, and I don't know if that's their actual name, but there'll be something like a conceptualized Plague Undead.
So, I mean, kind of a Necron. I mean, for Warhammer terms,
Necron Nurgle, if I'm going to use...
okay.
If I'm going to use Warhammer
Interesting.
Terms. Then you'll have... Again, if I'm using 40K terms, something like the Tyranids, the Zor or Zon ZZ,
okay,
something like that. And they're going to be more like bees or wasps.
So they're going to be insectoid but not looking like the Tyranids or like... Because Tyranids, they remind me a bit of the Geiger alien in some respects.
In some respects. They've gotten more cartoonish, but yeah, that's kind of the direction.
These are going to be more like... Bees
or wasps or something like that. And I asked, okay, does that imply then sort of a hive mentality? And if you lose this one queen or one central piece, your army starts to dissipate. And he's like, maybe. So
maybe.
So it sounds very exciting.
All right.
It sounds like they've really got some ideas going on how this is going to go. And I'm looking forward to seeing more concept art. I don't even know which army sounds the coolest. I want to try them all, like Pokemon.
You got to catch them all. Yeah.
So that's what I know right now about Warpath. They're still doing the beta, and hopefully we'll get some Titan rules, and hopefully we'll see another army list and some more concept art. I want to see some more figures coming out.
I'll be honest with you. I wanted to start getting a game going since I have the beta rules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have enough 40K type models to use any sort of tanks, any sort of planes. I have no idea what the footprint's going to be for it.
I've got plenty of 40K size bases, mm-hmm, from Warzone. No problem there. We all just have to play with infantry for the time being and just proxy tanks.
Right. Yeah. And so, like I said, I'm kind of holding off until I see some models coming out. Definitely want to play.
Well, let's see.
I'm guessing I'll play Marauders.
Fair enough.
Since I have an orc 40K army already.
I don't know. I love the Forge Fathers. I kind of want to paint those guys. They're pretty cool.
They actually, if I didn't already own the... I mean, if I'm buying Mantic models...
I don't know what I'm thinking, that I want to play a good guy dwarf army, but damn. They're looking good.
And although I would play it because if they had squats... If 40K had squats, I'd have a squat army. I really did. I would buy one if they still supported the squats, only because...
Well, these guys look better than
the
squats
course.
Did. These guys look hands down better than the squats did from the few that I've seen so far.
That's not hard to do.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures on eBay of the squats, and I'm not bagging on GW.
Space Dwarves!
But they weren't even like... I mean, they look goofy. They looked like they were in like little spandexy outfits
and
stuff.
Yeah, I had a squad in Exo Armor, which is the squad version of a Terminator. It was a bloody egg with legs.
How could it not be? They're stunties. You know, they're tiny.
It was embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking forward to that only because... Well, I mean, I love to play Dwarves. I want to try all this stuff.
I kind of want to try the Corporation. I kind of want to see what the Rebels do. I really want to see what those bugs do. That might have to call my name.
Yeah.
I do like bugs.
And our friend Taz, she is a Tyranid player through and through.
I think she finally sold the Nids, didn't she?
But she played the hell out of
them.
Yeah. That was her army. I could see her totally picking up a army of just killer wasps.
Yeah, you know what, if that's what they're going to look like, that might have to be the direction I go.
Knowing you as well as I do, I could see that appeal to you.
Oh,
That crazy insectoid army.
Oh, yeah.
So,
in a nutshell, I mean, I have to say, I was kind of head over heels for what I saw from Mantic, but Gen Con in general was just such a good time.
Exactly. Why don't you give us your Gen Con generalized wrap-up, because this is going to be a two-hour show, and we promised people this would never be a two-hour show, so...
Then we're liars, I guess, this time around. Sorry, guys. I can't say it enough. If you've never been to Gen Con, and you're a game player. I mean, don't go with a Warhammer-centric mind, unfortunately, because they don't have it. But if you play other games, and most of us do, this is like Mecha. I mean, please don't be offended by that if you're Islamic. My suggestion here is this is something that all gamers should aspire to do more than once in their life. This should be something that, for me, it's practically my biggest vacation of the year. It's the most exciting vacation I usually have planned. It's I love Gen Con. What a happy time. It's like a family reunion. We go out and we get silly. We have cocktails. We go back. We play games all night. I get to try new things. It's just such a tremendous time, and I can't recommend it enough. Oh, what a fun experience, and I can't wait to go next year. I'm already planning on what I want to do for next year. So
fantastic. Now, our last episode of Garage Gamer was about Kings of War.
It was indeed.
And I think everyone who's listening to that and this knows how much we enjoy it. Now, you were fortunate enough that this is the third or fourth time we've met. I've met Ronnie once.
Mm-hmm.
You've met him several times now.
Yeah. At this point, we're friendly enough to actually recognize each other on site, which is probably more of a treat for me. I don't know how much he cares, but...
But he knows we're pushing his game, and he seems to enjoy talking to us, so, you know...
Well, I was able to...
He gave you something, didn't he?
He did indeed. I was able to talk to him a little bit about it, and I mentioned that we did a Garage Gamer episode based on Kings of War, and we asked, you know, it would really behoove our listeners to get a chance to play this game. So we want you to play this game. We want you to try it, and we're willing to give you something for it.
Yeah, Ronnie was generous enough to give us something. So before we even tell you what it is, which you, if you've paid any attention to this episode, you'll know already, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Play Kings of War. Play Kings of War. We're going to put up a contest thread on the forums. I don't know exactly how long I'm going to keep this open. I mean, maybe two episodes, maybe till the next Garage Gamer.
Possibly.
I don't know.
This is exciting because this is our very first Garage Gamer contest.
Yes, it's a Garage Gamer contest. It'll still be under the contest thread. It'll be listed as Garage Gamer Kings of War. Play a game of Kings of War.
Yep.
Post your army list and give us a quick couple of paragraphs on your take on the game.
It doesn't have to be
a battle report.
It doesn't have to be a full page spread. If you just want to like jot down a paragraph or two,
give us your list and tell us what you think of the game, what you liked or didn't.
If it's only a sentence, we're not going to count it. So give us enough information for us to say good enough. But we want you to have tried the game and then just jot down what you thought of it, or you know, just a brief synopsis of your game, and you'll be in a random drawing to win a copy of...
Go ahead and tell them. You've got it.
I've got it. It's the Kings of War's Dwarf King's Hold Dead Rising, which is a $60 retail box game. It's a terrific game. Had a chance to play it at Gen Con. I loved it. You'll love this game. It's a lot of fun. Comes with, I think, 30 different miniatures.
And I'm annoyed because, God bless America, I've been wanting to buy this game now for about 6 months, and Chris comes home and says, I got a copy of Dwarf King's Hold, and I'm like, yay! And he's like, but it's not for us. And I said, boo! So...
Yeah, I'm sorry. One of these days I'll be brave enough to say, can we have a demo? But for us to keep. But until then,
that'll be the next step. We'll start being like D6 Generation or companies that make board games. We'll start sending them to us saying, hey, please try our game and see if you want to promote it on Garage Gamer.
Well, one of these days, yeah. we'll be able to make enough money from Garage Hammer
one of these
and Garage
days,
Gamer.
D. That's
But in the meantime, we're passing the luckiness on to you guys. So go ahead and play Kings of War, and let us know what you think, and we'll send you a copy. One of you will win a copy of Kings of War.
So that's
and if you're not sure
fantastic.
What to do, we need you to go onto our forums. There will be a list for the contest. You will need to post your battle report on that contest there.
Now, if you've never been on our forums yet, let's just say it right out.
Yes.
You have to introduce yourself. You have to go to the introduction page and introduce yourself. Otherwise, it will not let you post in any other forum.
Correct. Literally, you have to post there before anywhere else.
This is not to be a jerk store. This is A, because we like to promote it as community and not just have people signing in and throwing up crap. We'd like you to say hello first. Also, because it is an amazing way to keep out spam.
Mm-hmm.
We have almost no incidents of spam once we put this in effect. So
it's worked out well.
Introduce yourself and then pop in. Just put up your army list and let us know what you think of the game. Now, my students, whenever I have them write something, how long does it have to be? Now, you said just don't write it. This game sucked. I'm entered. Or this game rules.
If you do that, we're going to step in, put our arbiter's hats on, and say, sorry, no Charlie.
Well, you know what? It's not even that. We're not even going to post anything. We're not going to count it. You don't have to write the Bhagavad Gita either. a couple of paragraphs. What did you like and why? It's like I tell my students, add the why. I liked this because of this, or I didn't like this because of that. How long does it need to be, Mr. Whitetech? It needs to be as long as it needs to be.
As long as we got the idea that you played it, we know what you played, we know who you played against, and we know the highlights.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, what did you like or not, and why? It needs to be as long as it needs to be. As long as you can explain to me the why.
Now, we're not gonna choose our favorite. We're gonna choose one at random.
Absolutely.
So as long as you throw it in there, we're gonna get it to you.
Yeah, you got a chance. As long as you put any effort into it, you know, you're in.
And the game is great. So.
Yeah, and we're shipping it to you. So there you go.
With love. With love from us to you.
Lovingly packaged and sent from the crypt by the guys from Garage Hammer and Garage Gamer. I think that's a show.
That's it, guys. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, folks, I know this will be, well, actually, you know, we said it was going to be once a month. This one's sort of a bonus in there.
Well, Gen Con just seemed to be, like, so significant and so relevant to Garage Gamer, it seemed like an appropriate thing to do.
And there's absolutely no point in waiting for a whole month to talk about this stuff.
And I also wanted to talk about it while it's still fresh.
So. Yeah, exactly. So, folks, if you like this, we are asking if you can donate anything, you know, go to the donate button. This will become more of a regular and more of a full-blown show. The more people support it. So that's what we're looking for. If you can, great. Anything you can do to help is awesome. If not, just keep listening and tell your friends and throw us an iTunes review, because Lord knows we'd love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing a Garage Gamer Gen Con review part 2 next year.
Yes, we will. And we'll both have something excellent to say.
Can I say it? We'll do twice the coverage. There you go. So, folks, thanks for listening, and see you in a few weeks on Garage Gamer.
Bye, guys.
Let's do the yah-yahs now.